Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. As always, I'm joined by former Scotland captains Al Kellock and Chris Patterson and current Scotland captain Rachel Malcolm. Our special guests on the podcast this week are former Scotland and British and Irish Lions star Tom Smith and Scotland forwards coach John Dier. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very good. Thanks. Just at home in France and looking forward to some rugby quite soon.
Yeah, not long to go till the start of the Six Nations, which I'm sure we'll discuss later on. But obviously start with the very obvious question. You know, you've not been very well the past year or so, and it'd be great for you to just give a lot of us in Scotland and beyond a bit of an update on how you're getting on.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm having chemo every 2 weeks, which is a bit of a drag, but apart from that, everything's pretty positive. The scans were good a couple of months ago, so I can't really complain.
And whereabouts in France are you based, Tom? Is it? I know you've been out there a while now, but whereabouts are you?
Just about an hour from Bordeaux, in Lot-et-Garonne. So far enough south to not be too cold, but nice.
I must say, Tom, it's a while since we've kind of seen each other, but I think you are looking really well as well, and it's brilliant to hear you feeling so strong and so positive. But you say you get the therapy, what is it, every 2 weeks? So, I can only say I think you look absolutely amazing. You're doing really well. I'm so proud of the fight you're fighting. But it's quite speechless really, because I am so proud of how well you're looking.
Yeah, it was a bit of a blow at the beginning. I lost about 27 kilos. Within the space of about 3 months.
Wow!
Right, and the chemo was a bit harsh, but it's calmed down a bit now. And
what about the ongoing, obviously the pandemic and the COVID restrictions? Is that in any way altering what you need to be going through, or is it just a case of, I suppose, making sure that the bubbles are inexistent and protecting yourself that way?
Yeah, it's just, I guess it's the same as everybody. Every time I go into hospital, they just reiterate being careful and just saying, you know, you can't afford to catch this. So we've just got to be double careful. You know, we've got our youngest is still at school, so he's got out and about, but we are pretty careful. And, you know, so far we've been lucky.
Throughout, and probably to Mossy's point that you are feeling good, and you know you're getting on with the challenges ahead. You're obviously heavily involved with some charities as well.
Yeah, during the first few months after my diagnosis, Rob Wainwright got in touch. He was organising a bike ride from Twickenham to Murrayfield for last year's match, and I got involved with a charity called Fortitude, which raises funds for colon cancer research in the UK. And Rob on his bike ride raised just over 75,000 for the charity, which for a small charity was massive. And I've since become an ambassador and just trying to help the charity and just raise awareness. It's, you know, obviously when you're in the middle of it and you get diagnosed, you start to learn about cancer and the realities. And I hadn't realised how common colon cancer was and how, you know, some of the signs that I read about since I'd had, and I hadn't really appreciated what was going on with me. And we kind of have a thing as rugby players. I think it's quite common amongst us. We just get on. If you feel a bit sore, you feel a bit uncomfortable, you don't complain. And maybe I needed to complain a bit earlier, but I ended up in a A&E department in France, just outside Bordeaux, and in quite a lot of pain. And had I been checked a few months earlier, it would have been a lot easier.
We had Rob Wainwright on the podcast last week with his affiliation to Doddy Gampen and Doddy's charity and Doddy's foundation. But again, the speaks volumes of the spirit of rugby, really, that we come together and help each other. And not only that, but the fact that you and your current diagnosis, you're helping others by being involved in Fortitude as well.
Yeah, I've been really lucky with a good group of guys, just guys from my year, guys like Sean Longstaff, Budge, Grimesy, just stepping up to the mark. And when, you know, I frankly was looking over the abyss and, you know, wasn't really, there was saying it was looking bad and I wasn't necessarily looking at more than a month or two. So, no, you know, it, I've been really lucky and, you don't necessarily appreciate the rugby family and how guys help each other out until you're on the receiving end. So yeah, I do really appreciate it. And Rob's an amazing guy. He's a force of nature. I think cycling from Twickenham to Murrayfield in 3 days is incredible. And to raise the amount he did was, you know, they worked pretty hard. And they, I think, do you remember the weather for the match last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a tough few days, I think. So they can be proud of what they did.
Yeah, you wouldn't have caught me at the front of that peloton. I'm not sure I'd be any good in that one.
You wouldn't have done any good at the front of a peloton. You're too
No, I'm in the slipstream all. you mentioned rugby though, and excited. I mean, it's only what 2 weeks to the Six Nations now. Your first cap for Scotland was at Twickenham against England. So fresh experiences. That's where the current crop start. In 2 weeks' time, have you been keeping an eye on the squad or in Glasgow of late and the squad's development?
Yeah, I've just had a look at it a few days ago when it was announced. It's I think it's looking pretty good. I think the balance is good. I like the look of the forwards. I think the back row is looking quite interesting. I think maybe Gary Graham could slot in there as a ball carrying. Just had a bit of sort of ball carrying grunt to the effort, but across the board, I think you know, it looks good. I think obviously the hooker is you know, somebody's going to get an opportunity to stake a claim. I think so. You know, that's how it starts for everybody. So one of these guys who gets the chance will see what they're made of. But you know, I think if we can get parity up front at Twickenham, you never know. I think our backs are. They've got a bit of flair, and you give them the ball on the front foot, they might do something. So it's a tough start. I think we always seem to get tough starts.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, I'm quite optimistic. I think Wales and Ireland are in transition periods at the moment. And I think, you know, suddenly you're talking about a few of our guys for the Lions tour. And I think if they have a big season and everything settles down in the world,
You mentioned Alliance Tour. You're a guy who's got masses of experience of playing your way into or onto those tours. Did it change your mindset when you were going into Six Nations ahead of Alliance Tour that you're looking to try and get that jersey?
To be honest, in 97, I wasn't really aware of. I was so green. It was just I was just playing rugby, and I love playing rugby. And then suddenly it came into focus, but. Yeah, I think that going on a Lions tour, being part of that, is it kind of has a knock-on effect for the team. If enough of our players get on that tour, then they'll come away better players, and then there'll be a kick-on effect for the national team. So I think it's good. I think, you know, they're quite young, but you know, a young team can develop. But hopefully we'll stand up and say, you know, it's time to put a line in the sand and get some wins. And I think, you know, 3 games at home as well, which always helps. And, you know, we'll see.
You mentioned being quite green, Tom, but I think what you mean to say is you'd had a couple of caps for Scotland and then you're straight into the line. So, I mean, for a young green player up and coming, what a transition from you know, playing rugby to international rugby to then Lions rugby. Just talk us through when you found out about that whole situation unfolding. What did it mean to you, and how, what was the thought process for that?
You know, I think as you look back on your career and your play, you do realise how being in the right place at the right time has a lot to do with things. And I know I spoke to Jim Telfer a long time after the tour, but he said he saw me playing at the Murrow Sevens.
Wow.
And he knew I was at Dundee High, and then I moved to Watsonians, and he'd kind of taken note then, and just to keep an eye. And then I got invited to a couple of Scotland sessions, just as cannon fodder before a Six Nations game. And then suddenly things changed very quickly. I got on the 96 New Zealand tour, and not long after that, I got my first cap. So, yeah, you know, I think there is that sort of transition between you realise you're a contender and you might get a cap, or you might be in line for a selection on the tour, but actually realistically you just get on with your playing for Scotland, and there's enough stress doing that in the first place, so hopefully good things follow.
And that's funny, because it's almost exactly the same questions I was going to ask, is how, you know, a player's mind changes, but as you said, coming in uncapped at the start of that Six Nations in 1997, and then Five Nations in 97, and then going, not only being in the Lions Tour, but being in a successful Lions Tour, a test side, quite different fast forward in 4 years, because you were aware of the Lions concept. You had, had those amazing experiences in South Africa. So was your mindset different in the 2001 Six Nations than it was in the 97? Around Jamie's question of just that drive, that wish to be involved in the red jersey?
Yeah, it definitely changed. And I think rugby had changed too. 97 yeah. was, we were in that transition from amateur to professional. And, it was pretty much the first season of pro rugby.
Mm-hmm.
But, on the 97 tour, I think it's fair to say that we retained a lot of the amateur values and behaviours.
I can see the smile right enough.
Which is what made the tour so much fun. And I think, 4 years on, the game had changed massively. But and it was a different tour as well. I think, different coaching team. I think I was fortunate enough to work with Geach and Jim and Fran Cotton, who they just really knew what a Lions tour was about and how to get a group of guys that have been adversaries for the last 4 years to pull together in a relatively short time. And now it's even shorter. It's it's 5-6 weeks. I think we had about 8 or 9 weeks all in with the pre-tour get together in London. But yeah, going back to Scotland, and you can tick through a list of players, and there's quite a lot of players that have an opportunity to do something. So it would be nice.
Are you in contact with Gregor regularly? Keep an eye on what he's doing and how he's shaping that squad.
Yeah, we talk from time to time. I think he's got a million people offering opinions, so he doesn't need another one. But it'd be nice to not get that phone call saying you were the last player to play a test.
Start a test,
and it's about time somebody took that one off me. So I'm quite hopeful this time round.
I think so too. I think there's a lot of opportunities. It's interesting as well, Tom. You coached as well, as played at a high level, and I suppose just whilst we're still on the Scotland and Lions kind of topic, do you think coaches always just look at the here and now? Or you mentioned there, Jim Telford, remember you playing sevens years before at Melrose Sevens that influenced the Lions' decision ultimately. Do you think the coaches now will just look at this Six Nations, or will there be money in the bank from the last maybe 12 or 18 months for our players?
I think obviously Gatland's the coach, so he's going to know some of the players better than he knows others. So
yeah.
But you'd say some of the players that, particularly from the Welsh squad, for example, are not in the same form they were 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So will they benefit from knowing Gatland? They might do. We'll see. It's up to our guys to step up. We've got Wales at home, and I think every match is going to be big. But yeah, I think I don't know, to be honest. You don't run a Lions tour with thinking about the next Lions tour. You're not developing anybody for anything. Whereas Scotland, you can say I'm going to give this guy a game because the World Cup is a few years away and I want to see what he's got. And so it is a completely different dynamic. It is purely here and now. And the reality with rugby now is if you start talking about developing a side, if you don't get the results on the board in the here and now, then you won't be around to develop the side in a year or two's time. So it's, you know, it's tricky. I think it's a tough, it is a tough gig being being a coach at that level.
You mentioned there, you mentioned Scotland Wales at Murrayfield. It just instantly flicked back a memory of you and I playing together, Tom, and some of the listeners may not remember the influence you had, but, you know, just obviously a loose head prop, sorry, but I remember scoring a try in the corner at Murrayfield from a Tom Smith grubber kick through against Wales. I think it was 2003 or 2005 or 2003, I think it was. Just brilliant. I mean, could you see Rory Sutherland or Ollie Kebble dropping it on the right foot and dribbling it through? Kick attack?
You never know. You've got to give it a go. I think I remember that kick. The last bounce, it bounced 90 degrees backwards, almost over his head, straight into your hand. So,
how you managed to do that, I'll never know, Tom. Not only a grubber kick, but you also you put the spin in it for the bounce at the end. Eh?
It's one of those ones that you kicked through, or if it had been me or any other forwards, you kick it through and you're going, oh no, oh yeah, I've meant that, I've planned that, I've trained for that, and now it's my moment.
I'd like to say years of practice went into that kick, but I don't think I ever practiced kicking in my life. So,
to be honest, Tom, I think I saw it at Melrose Sevens 1 year.
Tommy, taking it back to the ongoing challenges briefly, how much have you taken from what you knew and who you were as a rugby player? I mean, I came into the squad and we toured together when I think it was Australia. Although I don't, you were playing the test stuff, I was playing the midweek stuff. But like knowing just the work ethic, the toughness that you brought to your playing career, how much of that have you grabbed and taken into this, or do you have to keep it separate?
I think, you know, when you're dealing with something like cancer, I think there are you know, big moments. One of my big moments was, you know, in the hospital, and I'd been in the hospital for about 4 or 5 weeks, and you know, I wasn't in a good place, and you know, I actually saw myself in the mirror for the first time in about 3 or 4 weeks. I'd just been confined to bed, and I realized I was kind of giving up without actually giving up. And I don't know how to articulate what fighting cancer is. I think there's a lot of medical expertise and people who know a lot of things more than I do who helped me along the way. But I started reading up about being a bit more positive mentally, visualization, and not treating the medicine as an unpleasant thing and treating it as a, you know, closing my eyes and thinking that, you know, this was fixing me. And I think, you know, I could probably use that in rugby. I think one of the problems with wisdom is, especially as a rugby player, is by the time you've got it, it's too late to apply it. And I think, you know, one of the most important strengths of a professional rugby player is probably self-awareness, aside from all the physical attributes, is, you know, knowing what you're good at, knowing what you're bad at, and knowing when you need to hold your hands up. And I think, you know, in that respect, you know, having the support and backup from the rugby community in those really tough days at the beginning was really key, and not just being alone in hospital for what actually, I thought I was in hospital for a couple of weeks. I don't really remember that period that well. It was just around about the World Cup, but I was actually there for quite a lot longer than I realised. So,
and that's quite interesting in itself, Tom, because, you know, when you read about you, and I remember watching you as, you know, a young guy playing, and, you know, you're the epitome of the kind of guy that did his talking on the pitch. Now all of a sudden you're getting this inpouring of support from fans, deservedly so, from around the world, and you're having to deal with all that exposure and media attention. I mean, was that a bit of a challenge for you as well? Because it's A, something that you don't particularly maybe like doing, but also B, something that you're maybe not used to doing?
Yeah, I'd probably say I'm not very good at it, if I'm honest. It's you know, I think I'm happy to do media work and talk to journalists, especially if I've got something to talk about. And you know, the hooking up with a charity is, you know, quite a positive step. And I see it as a positive step in my life right now. We're all going through going through COVID in our own ways. And, you know, there are times it would be nice to get out of the house a bit more often. It would be nice to see friends. And, you know, we go back to the UK a couple of times a year, and we've not been able to get back. And you know, we lost my father-in-law to COVID. So it's, you know, it has been tough. But yeah, it's actually nice to talk about something, hopefully, that will help somebody. And mm-hmm. and actually, after Rob's bike ride, I got contacted by somebody who'd just been diagnosed with the same cancer as me, and he'd got the test because he'd read about me, and they diagnosed it quickly, and he was fixed. So, you know, wow. there are positive things to come out of it, and I think yeah, hopefully I can help the charity raise a few pounds in the same.
No, Tom, that would be you push people towards the website, to the Fortitude website, get them reading, get them increasing their awareness of what early symptoms are as well. There is also, as well as the awareness point, there is an opportunity to raise funds for the charity as well and make a donation on there. But that would be your call to arms. I'm sorry I'm putting words in your mouth there, but you tell us.
No, absolutely. The website's like 4240tude.org.uk. It's a small charity. It's run by a brother and sister who lost their father to colon cancer. Every penny, there's no admin costs. Every penny goes straight to research. And there's the National Centre for Bowel Cancer, and it's St Mark's Hospital, just near Heathrow in London. And they do some pretty amazing stuff. So it's quite nice. You know, Rob Wainwright's contribution made a huge difference to what they could do and what they could achieve. And it would be nice for them to continue. It is the, you know, for non-smokers, it's the biggest killing cancer in the UK. So, which came as a shock to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, and if we're talking awareness of symptoms, just, you know, I'm going to, if you talk blood in your stool, if you have sore abdomen for an extended period, just get the test. And if you're mid-40s, then you should be getting screened. So there's a national screening program in Scotland for, I think, over 50s now. But any signs, you know, between that 40 and 50 time is probably not a bad time to get yourself tested if you can.
Tom Smith, Lions and Scotland legend, thank you very much for your time, and we're all thinking about you, and best luck with your recovery.
Thanks, guys.
Well, Al Mossy, great to catch up, and you know, obviously people are listening to this, we can see Tom and we can see how well he's looking, but you guys know Tom much better than me, so Mossy, how good was it to see him and hear from him there?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what the first kind of question threw me, because I looked up and I can't believe, I said it there, I can't believe how well he's looking. I mean, he's been, his mental strength and his physical strength and his mindset towards a horrific situation is inspirational. Like, you know, I've seen him two or three times on the screen since his diagnosis, and he said himself, however many, was it 23 kilos or something he said he'd lost, and he didn't mm-hmm. look well, understandably. But to see him having gone through, I think somewhere near 40 doses of chemotherapy in the last 18 months or so, looking and feeling so strong and talking so well, it's inspirational, and it's great to hear that he's already had an influence on a positive influence on a lot of other people. And you can hear his thirst and his drive for the international game of rugby as well. He still knows his stuff, and he's looking forward to the games.
No, he's incredible, man. Yeah, about you, Mossy, even when you're trying to reflect back on even just that brief conversation, it's unbelievable what he's going through. And he's meeting it the way Tommy would meet it. Interesting to hear him talking about the rugby family again, and you know, clearly the work that Rob did with the cycle, Rob continues to do with Doddy Gump stuff that's going on. That means a lot to Tom. He talked about the mm-hmm. really dark times when he was in the hospital, and the fact that he didn't at any time feel alone because he had that as well. And again, it's a bit like Doddy, like there's folk all over the world. It's not just the guys he pulled the jersey on next to, it's people he played against. And everybody who watched him play as well, he was an inspiration to so many, that there's just so many good wishes out there. So I encourage everybody over to the website, we'll share the link. And it's, as he said, it's about awareness and it's about funds as well.
And you know, you guys play with Tom. You know, Al probably towards the start of your career, the end of Tom's. But you know, when you, as a fan like myself, when I watched Tom, we know what type of player he was. He was a brace. He was up front. He just got the job done. But give us a little bit of an insight. What was he like off the pitch? Because I know, Moss, you've shared a few stories before. But what's the Tom Smith off the pitch like compared to on the pitch?
He is quiet. He's a quiet man, but a really kind of quite infectious sense of humour. It's funny. Very shy. Really quiet, but when you got to know him, he was a proper friend, you know, a guy that would, you know, back you to the absolute max, as tough as it come. I know that's an easy thing to say about rugby players, and he was, when we've seen it with his fight he has now, but just as tough as it come. But he had this wee smile and this wee smirk that you used to see creeping on the corner of his face, even at the most serious of times, even at the most kind of serious dressing downs for coaches. And you'd catch Tom's eye and you'd be thinking, here, Tom, he's really serious. He's really, you know, shy and quiet. He'll be taking this in. But he just saw a smirk in the corner of his mouth and you never quite knew what he was thinking. But like a brilliant friend, I remember Simon Webster telling the story. Simon Webster was, he was a little bit scared of Tom, I think, because of the aura and the strength that Tom had. And I'm sure we've said this before. Simon Webster's first tour, he stood in the back of Tom's flip-flop getting onto the bus in Australia. And then I've never seen anybody panic as much in my life as Webster. Oh, I'm really sorry. And Tom knew that. He could sense the feeling, the aura, and just kind of stared at Webbo. And Webbo, to this day, 15 years you know later, still says, I'm still scared. I've never made a mistake like that before, standing in the back of Tom's flip-flop. So he had an aura of strength, but a brilliant friend.
I think the aura is a great word to describe him, because he's the type of guy, when you're a young lad, if you're sitting there having a bit of a laugh and a joke and he walked in the room, you'd quiet down. It's like, you know, almost the head teacher. Until you get to know him a little bit more, it's like, oh, there's Tom. And I've seen some training, I think I've shared that in the podcast before, about Ewan Murray, young lad coming through thinking he was going to take every accolade that was going, and he made the mistake of winking at Tom in a scrummaging session, and then Tom spent the next half an hour destroying him. And he went on and learned an awful lot from that. To my disadvantage, I was tucked in behind Ewan at 110 kilograms or whatever it was at the time, giving him everything that I possibly had. But Tommy was just, he was a different breed when it came to the scrummaging as well. But then the flip side of that is, I've done a few, you know, kind of, he does the boxes that BT Murrayfield on occasion, or occasion of dinner. He doesn't do that much of that thing, as you say, Jamie, but you see him standing there with a glass of red wine in his hand, and he's talking quietly, but everybody in the room is concentrating. And like Mossy says, he'll just drop in, and everybody thinks it's going to be really serious. It's just serious Tom Smith. Then all of a sudden, there's just a little bit, and you can see people looking at him going, like, is he joking? And then the smirk arrives and the room erupts. So, you know, a real dry sense of humour. A quality individual. Just the kind of guy that when you grew up and you were coming through, you just looked at him and you wanted Tommy to acknowledge you. You wanted Tommy to, you know, to even whether it was rugby or non-rugby, you wanted to make sure that you were doing as much as you can to earn his respect.
Do you know, maybe a nice way of summing it up, and when people say you need good people and characters in a changing room. Like when, and I'm talking about when younger players come into a situation, or you look up to a senior player. Now, senior, obviously, most people assume it's because they've got the most caps or the oldest. He was the stereotypical senior player from Wargo. The standard that he set, the desire, the burning attitude, and the toughness. Like, he didn't need to say anything. You didn't need to know him. You didn't need to know who he was, what he'd achieved. You just had to look at him, and he was the epitome of what you want to set a standard in the changing room without saying a thing. Be it a young player coming in, be it an older player coming back, be it a coach. Coaches looked up to Tom. There's very few players who I've played with that would need a reassuring glance from Tom, because he was that powerful in terms of just doing the right thing at the right time, saying the right thing at the right time, and just an amazing player.
We're now joined by the current Scotland assistant coach, a former teammate of mine for a long time ago, John Dale. Delighted to have you. You're in camp with the squad. You've been in the last 3 or 4 days, part of the build-up to next Saturday's fixture. Obviously started last weekend. So So the first question is, how is everyone, how's the squad and how are things looking this week?
Excellent. I mean, I think everybody's settled really well, and I've been in my second campaign now, and I think it just really surprised me the quality that we have in the room. And I know going through selection for the second time, how hard it was to try and get to the fine detail in a few positions. And, you know, a lot of the, as you would expect, the guys have come in pretty excited to be here, and a lot of the early meetings are you know, fully optimism and what we can achieve. So it's been a really positive environment so far.
JD, just before we go on and have a bit of a look at the squad and your role in particular, Mossy tells me that you used to play as his number 12.
That's right.
So with all that experience from playing outside the great man, are you keeping Mike Blair on his toes as well as far as the stuff he's delivering?
Yeah, well, we've been playing a lot of coaches' challenges, and Mike usually picks a game that he's made up that has no rules of winning. So we've had him on the kick football, and he's been coming second best there. So pretty good. You know, the Gala boys have been put together, so I've unfortunately got Gregor in my team. So a bit of a nightmare, but we're doing enough to get Mike away.
Good to know somebody's keeping an eye on him.
John and I played youth rugby, school rugby, club rugby for a long time together. And his first game for Gala was in the wing, John, remember? Then he moved into centre and then found home in the back row, eh?
That was it, yeah. Bit of a hybrid. And that was actually Gregor's brother, Craig. Remember the first game for Gala, the left wing in the Border League against Langham. And it was, we get John involved in the game. I think it was a double miss pass and got absolutely melted. The worst dead leg I've ever had of it. It's good to play and fulfill your dream and get a game for Gala. So
I know, loads of experience. Funny,
you mean, you do look at least 10 years younger than Mossy as well, so it's funny to hear that you've played up, grown up together.
Your internet must be buffering, Al, on that screen. If you, No, loads of experience playing, obviously, John, you know, through club rugby, professional rugby as well, but massive amount of coaching experience built up as well, all through kind of pathways of, you know, assistant coaches, head coaches with clubs, pro teams, 20s, 7s, and obviously delighted to see you in this assistant coach role with the national team. What experiences from all those different coaching environments have you taken into this role with the national team?
And I think when you're a younger coach, you go off what you've learned from the environments you've been in. You're lucky enough to have a considerable time in professional rugby with the Border Reavers at that time. So your first kind of coaching call, you're into club rugby. And I thought doing that as a kind of player coach was a good integration for me, because you're still playing the game and you're not asking guys to do things that you're not going to be responsible for as well come the weekend. So I was lucky enough to be given an opportunity while still playing at the Borders to help out with Melrose back in 2006. So with a couple of years alongside Craig Chalmers, who was the head coach, obviously former international standoff. And it was great balance where I could help with the technical side of the set piece, but then still go and play, and Craig could assume all the kind of head coach parts. So I learned a hell of a lot through that time, and ended up having about 12 years of coaching there at Melrose alongside 7 years with the under-20s as well. So it was an excellent combination for me to really kind of dip my feet in the water of coaching. And, you know, starting a young family at the time as well, it was a really good balance where I could have the club output, still continue to play a little bit, but, you know, responsibility was around the family and things there as well. And you still got the opportunity to coach at an elite level through the under-20s and build some great relationships, which I find myself now reconnected with a lot of these players who've turned into, you know, outstanding men and outstanding players.
And then, obviously, coming into the Scotland role now, you said before, this is your second campaign. From kind of generally speaking, before we go more specifics, the squad in particular, the forwards you've selected in this squad, what do you expect to see from them in this campaign?
And we've talked a lot about just not trying to recreate what other people do really well, just to try and look at the strengths we've got in the group and really see how we can. In the limited time we have in international rugby in terms of preparation, it's not like the club where you have the full week every week. It's about, you know, a lot of international weeks about recovery. Once we start and we get in through England, we're straight into Wales. So it's about really getting the stuff that's really important to us and making sure that we can really tie down that detail and make sure that the players can still grow through this period as well. There's a lot of very good coaching through defence through Mike Blair and Tark and Gregor, through Peter de Villiers on the scrum. So through all the S&C staff as well, it's just trying to get the right plan for all the players on and off the field to make sure that they can be the best version of themselves.
You've got as well quite a few new faces, I guess, in that pack in particular. How does that kind of influence your coaching, you know, with players who've never been maybe in the Scotland setup or in an international training squad before? How does that influence kind of how you approach these early camps working with them?
Well, I think what we've tried to do is we've done a good review of the autumn, so that picked out all the stuff that was really went well for us and all the stuff that we definitely can improve on and we need to based on the teams we're playing. You know, England away first up, then straight to Wales and then France. It's a really hard start. So just being able to pick on all the really good stuff for the autumn, create a bit of momentum, but revisit a few areas because, as you said, we've got guys coming in for the first time that they maybe aren't up to speed with a lot of the terminology that we use and the systems that we run. So it's been great going back for everybody just to embed a bit more learning and really look as a new group how we can use the extra skill sets we've got now. As you said, some really promising youngsters, and Ewan Ashman and Rory Dards, right, you know, the start of their careers at the bottom end there. I just how well that they've really fitted into the environment. And then guys like Dave Cherry at 30-year-old, a really experienced player who's had to work so hard for this opportunity, and he's going to come in with his own skill sets as well. So it's been great, all the different dynamics, but just revisiting and getting everybody on the page with everyone in front of us, I suppose, is exciting before you get into battle, really.
And that's an important point. It's great to hear how much is focused on the players as Scotland players rather than as, you know, club players, or rather than worrying about what England or Wales may do, because you don't know. I mean, there's you know, newspaper articles this week around England maybe perhaps changing how they're going to try and play. You don't know, really. Scotland will evolve since the Autumn Nations Cup. England, all your opponents will evolve. So focusing on what Scotland can get right, focusing on his core skills and getting off to a good start, it's really important, isn't it?
It is, definitely. And look, international rugby, there's no really opportunity to test, certainly not through the Six Nations. So the boys are fully focused on the skill sets, and it's trying to have good coverage, different ways to play different opposition. And I think that's a coach's job, is to facilitate these players to make sure that they've got all the right tools based on who we're trying to play. So it's a combination. The players are under pressure, but you know, the coaches as well, they've got a role to play within that as well. And the experienced leadership groups, they take that on and they lead that. They self kind of educate their players and lead the game plans and systems that we're trying to impose.
Was selection slightly more difficult due to kind of games being disrupted at club level? Obviously, there was fewer games to watch, so fewer opportunities to see people. I know it's just what happened and you have to adapt, but is that maybe different from experiences in the past?
Yeah, and I think, look, we're very conscious. Some guys, you know, that left us in the autumn maybe with a niggle or a little bit of a knock that was short-term, and then you end up getting a couple of games with the COVID situation as well, not going ahead, that some players were really lacking a bit of game time. And over the first part, with a view to what the peripheral squad might look like for England, and some decisions were based on guys staying with clubs to try and get a little bit more rugby and knowing that they will play a part in the Six Nations, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks into the campaign.
Eddie, you mentioned your leadership group there and the influence they can have, and albeit it is, I'm looking at you're inexperienced in places, but huge amounts of experience in our places. I look at the second row in particular, and we're bringing somebody back, Big Richie Gray back with 65 caps, and he's obviously his brother 61 catching him up close, so they'll be keeping an eye on that over the course of the Six Nations. But a lot of leaders in that group, Scott Cummins, young guy, but a guy who's got bags of experience, and obviously Grant Gilchrist in there too.
Yeah, it's been excellent. And for me, certainly, based around the forwards on that line out, part, there's excellent skill sets there from some guys who really enjoy the defensive side of it, and you know, a lot of the things that they've picked up playing in really good clubs and also the attack side. It's been excellent to see the former Richie Gray over the last couple of weeks, and in the games that mattered, really the head-to-heads, Edinburgh and Glasgow, I thought especially the first one, he showed that the class and quality that he has is a point of difference. And having a good chat with him, he was still probably a little bit taken aback around the selection because he had been involved in the autumn, but I think based at that time, he'd had limited game time, he'd just returned from France, and it was more just to see where he was about. And you know, this selection's all about his momentum and the quality he can bring to the group. So even in the unit session this morning, you can just see the quality, and it's, you know, for the young players to look at that as well. It gets everybody's, I suppose, their training level just has to go up a notch as well. So it's been excellent. And having Grant Gilchrist back as well, it really gives us more strength in that area.
And then, I guess, looking at the other areas of the forwards, if we move on to now, kind of like looking at the front row, you touched on Dave Cherry, and obviously he's been in good form for Edinburgh. Around the rest of that front row, what are you expecting from them? Obviously, we saw quite a good battle at scrum time over the head-to-heads Glasgow v Edinburgh, which probably gave you quite a lot to think about. So I guess off the back of that, what are your thoughts in terms of the pack as a whole in terms of a scrummaging pack?
From the scrum point of view, I think we've got, like, with Peter de Villiers here, I think the focus that's been shown, especially around the Six Nations last year, where it was Peter's first real campaign, the difference he made to that area, just through the consistent time he'll have with them as well, that you've got two guys with, or two sets of players, the majority of guys coming from Edinburgh and Glasgow, slightly different philosophies around the scrum, and, you know, definitely trying to get the one up on each other in these games as well. And we've got experience from wider afield, from outside. You know, Ewan Ashman from Sale comes with a different skill set around that as well. But the work Peter done through the Six Nations, it gave us, you know, a real foothold. I think we had the most successful scrum in terms of penalties gained. So shows the work that he did there. And we're trying to, you know, give our pack the kind of full package, really, where we can be effective on attack, effective on our line of defence, and have a scrum that's really, you know, at the standard that's required for the Six Nations as well. And, you know, with the work that Peter does with them, I'm pretty sure we'll have all of these guys on the same page and at the same level.
Does, looking at the front row, to Rachel's point, there are a couple of notable absentees in Fraser Brown and Stuart McInally, two hugely experienced hookers, and offer different skill sets at times as well, but guys that have chopped and changed around that Scotland squad. How do you go about making sure that the guys come in, get straight up to speed to where they've been?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, two guys that are massively part of the leadership group as well, in terms of you know, Stuart and Fraser, and excellent, outstanding, world-class players. So to lose both of them with injuries, like, for them and for us, really, really disappointing. But they'll come back, and they'll come back better, and it you know, gives an opportunity. George Turner has been almost the bit part player, and, you know, trying to, you know, fill in around these guys for a long period of time, and we know the qualities he has. And we thought through the autumn, he, you know, got the ability to, and the opportunity to start in a couple of games, and his form's been very, very good, probably as good as we've seen. We know how effective outside of the set piece he's been, and he's really worked on his process around his throwing, and we're seeing a real, really good version of George, and this is a really good time for him to really step forward and come out of the shadows a little bit. And guys like Dave Cherry, Grant Stewart being around the squad, and was fantastic in the lead up to the World Cup, missed out in selection. So these guys come in hugely motivated, and it's about, you know, picking the jersey up where Fraser and Stewart left it, and I'm sure they will.
And in terms of, I mean, that's our squad, but in terms of the first game up against England, how closely have you looked at them? And I think everybody knows that the challenge is, the primary challenge when you face England at Twickenham is going to be that physical intensity, the line speed, and the physicality they bring in defence, especially. Are there, kind of, you don't have to tell us what they are, but I assume there's more kind of creative ways of trying to beat that defence, because anybody to try to take them on physically hasn't been that successful. So how closely have you looked at England, and can we expect a kind of different approach to what they're used to?
Yeah, I think, look, basically everything, England have the ability to play in many ways, don't they? They have all the skill sets, and they can hurt you in lots of different ways. Through the autumn, they backed their defence, which has been excellent for them over a number of periods, and the quality of their kicking game that puts you under pressure and to defend you, to squeeze you at set piece. I've seen Eddie's comments last week around their mantra about trying to kill and hurt people set piece and breakdown, and we know that they have threats all over, so we've looked at them pretty closely. And we'll, as always, try and target areas, but what we have to be able to do is to make sure our own game's worthy of of the challenge as well, and make sure that we're putting enough work into that as well, and being able to adapt to what England throw at us, the physicality that they show, we've got to match that. And you know, listen to a few of the coaches' preview meetings, it's all been based around that. And you know, little hints of England, I think, as we get further up the end of this week and into next week, that'll intensify. But we've got to make sure our game's at the level as well, where we can, you know, impose ourselves and inflict some pain to them in key areas.
Hey, Dale, you guys talk around the Lions, and you know, there's a good number of your pack who be looking to put the hand up for selection for that. Is that something that you'll use as an extra motivation? Is it something you could use for individuals when there's maybe individual matchups across, whether it's against England in that first game or throughout the tournament?
Yeah, 100%. Look, we as Scottish coaches, we see the detail of our players week in, week out. And you know, you mentioned earlier, like Scott Cummins, your Johnny Graves, your Zanders. You know, we talked about Fraser and Stuart as well. Like the quality, the consistent stats that come out of these players, Jamie Ritchie's and Hamish in the back row. I mean, I know we're looking through Scottish glasses, but when you go through just what you see superficially, the actual detail and the consistency of their game, then they would have to be very, very, you know, good players outside of that are better than them regularly. So we know, and that the players will be motivated internally. It's not something they show outside, but as coaches, we are motivated to get as many players as we want, as we can, into that line selection. And I think that's a good reflection in the whole group. But we've got some great individuals. I think, to a man, they're focused on the job for Scotland. It's not something they're going to talk about, but in this unique year, then of course it's a driver for everyone.
Mossy, obviously a man you know well, from the playing days as well as the coaching side of things as well. Tell you what it did for me, it got the excitement levels going a little bit. The fact, just to hear them talking about the environment and what he's got to do with the players as far as looking ahead to that England game, and to your point about, actually at the moment it's about keeping a lid on it, from a player's point of view, not from us, we can do what we want.
I know, it is that is quite a big challenge, I think, Rach, you'll know as well. Like when you're in camp, the intensity rises, but then it's quite unusual to have, I mean, the players in camp exclusively from, I think, last Sunday until certainly through the Wales game. So usually it would be a release, maybe, you know, if you're going home for a night or two, but under the kind of COVID bubble, you're in it. And it will be quite difficult for the coaches to keep, you know, suppress that energy, but you don't want the players absolutely exhausted to use all the nervous energy within a couple of days. So, but there's a lot of experience in that coaching team. John has a lot of coaching experience. I mean, he said it there, for a relatively young guys, he has racked up a lot of experience in all areas, really, of coaching in Scotland. Is a diligent coach. He does a lot of studying. Is moving forward at a quick rate. A lot of the kind of top players in terms of performance are players that he helped develop in that 20s, so they'll know him as much as he knows them, which is another strength. But it's delighted to see him doing so well. And this will be his first Six Nations. He'll then understand what Six Nations is about as well, because it is different to an Autumn Nations or an Autumn Test campaign, but he'll enjoy it.
Rach, we're being very insensitive, but your opportunity is going to come later in the year. But
hopefully.
You've got even longer to keep a lid in it.
I don't get myself excited about anything now. I'm not even thinking about it. I'm like, it might happen. But yeah, no, hopefully we'll be up in the not-too-distant future.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week for more exclusive content.